We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hello, and welcome to everyone joining us today. It's fantastic to have you here for our exploration into high-impact tutoring in the Multi-Tier System of Support, or MTSS, framework. I'm Toni Rader. I'm the Vice President of Learning Quality and Operations at Cignition. I joined Cignition in March of 2021, and since then, I've had the privilege of leading our K-12 online tutoring programs. And at Cignition, we're all dedicated to enriching the educational journey of our students. And today, it's my honor to moderate this discussion and introduce you to our wonderful panelists. Each of our panelists is a pioneer in the field of education and high-impact tutoring. First, we'd like to welcome Susanna Loeb, professor and faculty director at Stanford University's Graduate School of Education. Susanna is the founder and executive director of the National Student Support Accelerator, and her work is pivotal in bridging educational opportunity gaps through high-impact tutoring. Joining us as well is Angeline Thompson, the Director of Extended Academic Learning at Denver Public Schools. Angeline's leadership has been instrumental in enhancing student learning through various initiatives, including grade-level tutoring and extended learning programs throughout the school year. And last, but certainly not least, we have Sarah Wilson, the Tutoring and Policy Administrator at the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce. Sarah oversees state and federally funded tutoring programs, and she plays an important role in the implementation of high dosage tutoring strategies across the state of Ohio. So as you can see, our panelists bring a wealth of knowledge and experience that promises to make today's discussion transformative. So let's delve into the insights they have to share on advancing educational equity and effectiveness through high-impact tutoring. So as I mentioned, I'm here representing the Cignition tutoring team, and I can't wait to share with you all the dedication we pour into K-12 education. What really sets us apart at Cignition is our amazing team of tutors and program managers and our approach that puts data at the center of everything we do. We also promote a learning environment that's all about collaboration. And we're here today to talk about something we're really excited about, high impact tutoring, and how it can take our school systems to the next level. We really believe in making a difference one student at a time, and we're here to talk about how we can all contribute to that mission. So let's get started with a quick video and learn how we can elevate our educational strategies through high impact tutoring.
Cignition is an amazing learning process.
At Cignition, we're a step beyond traditional tutoring.
Cignition just was a gift we got in addition to our instruction. Cignition is a virtual tutoring platform that our students in fourth and fifth grade get to use 3 times a week.
Our research-based approach and our experienced tutors guide students through their academic journeys.
Our students love Cignition. They love their tutors. The kids are gaining so much, and they're understanding. They're hearing the content delivered in a different way.
They usually go over like fractions, adding mixed fractions, subtracting mixed fractions, multiplying. My tutor also makes that fun.
What I really love about Cignition is like the tutor gets to know us and we get to know about them.
By using a collaborative learning model, our tutoring sessions facilitate quality student interactions and allow learners to gain a deeper understanding of the material while developing critical 21st century skills.
Cignition is beautiful in the sense that they also do grade level content, but they can scaffold it even more. So we can say this group really needs to go back to third grade and understand multiplication. and they can do that.
I did struggle like a lot. I was confused on the math problems, but when I went to fourth grade, I had Cignition. And then the tutors helped me, and then I'm like, oh, now I understand. And now in fifth grade, I'm doing actually really, really, really good.
While most tutoring programs are instructor-led, Cignition empowers students to own their learning by talking through problems together and building confidence in their problem solving.
It's helpful, and the tutors are extremely nice.
Schools and families are seeing proven, repeatable results from partnering with Cignition.
Cignition partners with me and meets with me weekly to connect and talk about how data's looking. How are the students doing?
And that's exactly what we aim for, partnership.
I was worried about how I was going to give up a little bit of my time for someone else to take it. But boy, was I wrong with that first thought. I can't tell you how much it helps me as a teacher.
At Cignition, we're building conceptual understanding, one engaged learner at a time.
All right, so moving on to what we've lined up for today, we're going to zoom in on high-impact tutoring and its ability to make the most out of every minute of instruction. And you know, high-impact tutoring isn't just about teaching in smaller groups. It's really much more personalized than that. We're talking about tailoring the educational experience for each and every student, filling in those learning gaps, and really nurturing their academic growth. And there's another piece of the puzzle we're really excited to delve into today, the multi-tiered system of supports, or MTSS framework. And as you all know, it's a really well thought out framework that helps us provide exactly the right support for students, no matter where they are in their educational journey. It's really about making sure that every single student has what they need to grow academically. And so we'll get started in just a moment. And please remember, there will be a Q&A session at the end. So again, feel free to click the question mark icon at the top to post your questions as we go along. All right, let's get started by talking a little bit more about high impact tutoring. This isn't just your run-of-the-mill homework help. What we're talking about here is a deep dive into learning that pushes the boundaries beyond the traditional. It's really about igniting a spark of active participation and creating a place where learning is a collaborative experience with the students steering their own journey. And this approach makes education an experience that's not just effective, but really empowering for the students. And here's the clincher. There's a ton of research out there that backs up how effective this method can be. We're talking about the kind of tutoring that can move a student's learning forward at an incredible pace. So you might think about achieving up to 2 years of academic growth in a single school year. And those are the kind of results that can really make you sit up and pay attention. So let's dive deeper and figure out how we can bring this level of transformation to our school systems. So let's get started with a really important topic. We want to talk about choosing the students to participate in tutoring. And it isn't just about looking at their grades. It's really more about figuring out where tutoring can make the most difference. We're talking about like how often students show up at school, their specific academic needs, their motivation levels, and even their social and emotional situations. All these factors are really key in deciding which students will benefit from your tutoring programs. So, Angeline, we'd like to hear your thoughts first on this. Based on your experience at Denver Public Schools, what criteria do you believe should guide schools in selecting students for their tutoring programs to maximize the impact of those opportunities?
Yeah, so that's a complex question because what I believe and what happens depends on funding, at Denver Public Schools, we have a grant that funds some of our high impact tutoring, and they're very specific on how they want students to be selected. And we also have high impact tutoring that is funded through the district, which we have a little bit more leeway on how we select students. Most of the students who we engage in high impact tutoring in Denver Public Schools are students that are below grade level, but just on the cusp. So they're very close. And so the added time with a tutor really helps to get them to grade level and beyond. We also provide tutoring for students who would not otherwise have the socioeconomic resources at home to get a tutor. So we make sure that we provide those equitable opportunities for students who don't have the resources to have tutoring outside of school. We also think about attendance and students who are frequently at school, because we know if they're not going to be at school, then tutoring is not going to be beneficial to them. And additionally, we think about students that need that additional encouragement and social emotional support that they can get from tutors. Students that have low confidence in math and reading really do benefit from working one-on-one with a tutor that believes in them and helps them to see that they are mathematicians, they are readers, they are writers. And so students that need that extra love are very good fits for high impact tutoring.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Angeline. And Sarah, turning to you next, from your vantage point overseeing tutoring policy with the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce, what key criteria should schools consider when choosing students for their tutoring?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. The criteria listed on the slide, attendance, academic need, motivation, socio-emotional aspects, are all key criteria that drive successful tutoring programs. Ultimately, I think it's appropriate, we started with Angeline, schools are best positioned to identify the students that are participating in their programs because they know them most directly. We know that tutoring is great for all students, right? I think oftentimes folks think that we think that tutoring is just for struggling learners, but it can be for all learners. And there are benefits when tutoring is provided to entire classrooms or grade bands, particularly from the viewpoint of providing services to all students. We do know, though, that resources are limited. And sometimes we have to prioritize certain criteria when considering limited resources. In Ohio, much of our tutoring work came following the pandemic and school closures and has been focused on learning acceleration. And so the majority of the work that we've really done has been to focus on those students in those schools and districts most impacted by the pandemic. As we move forward, we will be looking at our priorities for tutoring. But yeah, I think I touched on the key points. Schools are best positioned. Tutoring is great for all students, but you need to prioritize the criteria that are listed on the slide when considering students to select with limited resources.
All right. Thank you very much, Sarah. And Susanna, we want to get your input as well. So drawing from your work in education policy and your role in expanding access to high impact tutoring with the National Student Support Accelerator, what guidelines do you recommend that schools follow in selecting students for their tutoring programs?
Yes, thanks. It's great. It's great to be here, by the way. I'm really pleased to be here. It's such a great group of participants. I loved everyone's writing their names so we could see where they came from today. And I think the conversation, and particularly about how tutoring can be integrated with MTSS, is going to be really exciting. So I actually think Angeline and Sarah covered much of the issues here in selecting students. I just want to emphasize a couple of things. One is that the research shows that it can be really effective for a whole range of students, students who are really far behind in grade level, students on grade level, just kind of the range there, and also really across subject areas and grade levels. Most places when they're deciding which students should get high impact tutoring actually first choose the subject matter and grade level that they're interested in. Typically, the some of the key skills, like learning to read, is a big focus of where people are, where educators are choosing to put their resources into high impact tutoring, or some of the math needed to really be successful in algebra. That's another kind of area of that's typically selected for that. Then once you select that area and you know, the reason why it's so good to select an area first for tutoring is because you really do need high quality instructional materials to tutor well. And so you want to make sure that you've got those kinds of materials. You've got the assessments for students so that you can really target the tutoring for them. Then you want to select students. And I think you've really outlined a lot of the reasons that or the ways that schools and districts choose which students to take it. Academic need is usually the main factor that places are considering. And I think that makes sense because you want to really support students who are behind, or students who are behind that you feel the high impact tutoring could really be beneficial for them. Attendance is a tricky one because it is high impact because it's intensive. And so you want to make sure the students are there. We're also finding evidence that high impact tutoring can improve attendance because it really can engage and motivate students, help them identify as learners, like we saw in the movie the video that you just shared. So I think you want students who are attending so they can achieve this and they can really participate well in high impact tutoring, but they can also benefit from it. And then I think they benefit in all these other ways as well. But the two main things that I would consider, like we talked about, are their attendance and their academic needs. And you can think of those academic needs in relationship to all the other kinds of supports you have in school and where high impact tutoring could really be most beneficial for you. I guess one other thing is there are places where you just want to kind of give it to all students in a particular grade or subject area. That's another approach that I think you can do, particularly in the lower grades.
Thank you very much, Susanna. And now let's move on to another really important topic, and that's fitting our tutoring programs into the schools and the student schedules. This can be really tough. So as you know, research shows that it's important to align our tutoring sessions with the students' daily schedules. And we know that the right scheduling can really influence student engagement and learning outcomes. So this is something we really need to get right. So turning to the audience, now we'd like to hear from everyone participating in the webinar. So in the chat, please let us know which days of the week and times of the day you consider most effective for tutoring sessions, along with your reasons for that. Your input is really important to shaping our conversation, so we appreciate your participation in the chat. And while you're typing in the chat, Susanna, we would love to start with your insights on this. How do you think schools can best adapt their scheduling of tutoring programs to address the diverse needs of students in different grade levels?
Yeah, thanks. So scheduling really is one of the great challenges of high impact tutoring, but one that we've seen lots of schools and districts address and really manage to do well. I think the key thing to understand is that in order for high impact tutoring to be effective, students have to participate and they have to be able to participate regularly. To do this and to make sure that even students who are initially disengaged in school and so who wouldn't kind of volunteer initially for some of this kind of extra intensive work, they really need it. And in order to get it to them, the evidence shows that it should be during the school day. There are programs that do tutoring either immediately before or after school. It can work if you can really track the students who are receiving it and make sure they're receiving it and then give it to other students during the school day for the ones who can't do immediately before and after school. But in order to reach the students most in need, getting it into the school day is really important. So that's just kind of a baseline. I've seen a lot of districts that have tried before and after school and then really gone back to doing it during the school day. then you have to figure out how to do it during the school day. And that's why the MTSS system and school systems that already have intervention periods in the school day are really great for trying to integrate tutoring into the school schedules, because there's a place there for tutoring to occur. Also, as I was mentioning before, in the early grades, it's possible to do push-in forms of tutoring, where there is a tutor essentially in the classroom in kindergarten and first grade who can help students every day or most days in tutoring without huge disruptions and without the class having to move. And that's just because those grades, the days are much more flexible. As you go up, you really need to schedule it in the school day, and you want to schedule it not to replace core academic instruction, but in addition to core academic instruction. And that often needs kind of specific days in the schedule put aside for this kind of work.
All right. Thank you, Susanna. And Angeline, in your perspective, how should schools customize their scheduling strategies to support different learning environments and grade levels and make sure that all of the students benefit from tutoring programs?
Yeah, so we've learned a lot about scheduling for tutoring at Denver Public Schools. We learned a lot through trial and error. And what we have discovered is that choosing students for tutoring prior to their academic school year and having a plan in place when master schedules are being created is the best time to think about when tutoring can happen. It's really difficult once school has started and schedules have been made to then like find places and times. We've learned that taking kids out of art and PE and all of those band and extracurriculars is the worst idea for finding time for tutoring, because of course those are the times that kids look forward to in the school day. And so they feel like it's a punishment when you take those things away for them to go into tutoring, even though tutoring may be beneficial for them and they may even enjoy tutoring. They feel like there's this fear of missing out that's happening with students. So it's better at the beginning of the year to figure out what time of day works. We also discovered that tutoring right after lunch is a really terrible idea, because kids have just been social and excited, and it's really hard for them to then bring that down and focus on tutoring. So after lunch is not always a great time for tutoring. Small groups are great, but individualized tutoring is better. We've learned that through some trial and error. We know that younger kids are great with small groups, but older kids are not, because of their own social development and they're feeling insecure about other people being a part of their tutoring or knowing that they need tutoring, which, you know, you can work on that with kids and help them to understand that tutoring is not a punishment and it is not a shame to need that extra support. But it's a lot more difficult for older kids to do group tutoring than it is for younger kids. So those are some of the things that we've learned. It is a lot easier to do tutoring during the school day because kids are, for lack of better terms, a captive audience. But before school and after school works only if there's transportation and kids are really committed to being in those spaces. So it's better to do it during the school day. And it's just a lot easier to plan for those tutoring blocks in your master schedule before the school year starts, so that you're not switching up kids' regular routines and schedules. Even when you switch up adults' routines and schedules, it's difficult. So if you can like dedicate time on the front end, it works a lot better. And again, stay away from taking away those enrichment activities that kids really look forward to, and stay away from doing it right after lunch.
All right. Thank you, Angeline. And Sarah, we'd like to hear your thoughts now. How can districts and schools tailor their scheduling to cater to all the different requirements?
Yeah, this is challenging because it's so contextual based on each district and school. And so we know that time during the school day is a precious commodity. it's hard work to find time during the day. I can speak to some of the things that are happening in Ohio, in how schools are identifying those times during the school day to offer tutoring. We have many schools that are leveraging their intervention periods and their title tutoring periods and their win times and their local program times to offer tutoring supports for their students. We have also seen some great successes with integrating it and pushing it into the classroom to support small group rotations or small group discussions, freeing teachers up to provide more intensive support to those students who need it most while keeping other kids on task, students on task with the work that they're doing. My light just switched off. Apologies. We also have seen it free teachers up to do enrichment with students who may need enrichment activities when pushing into core instruction. It really is site by site. I think one of the other things we're looking at in Ohio for those before and after school programs, we know tutoring attendance is stronger during the school day. Alignment tends to be stronger between tutors and what they're tutoring and core instruction because they have active engagement with teachers. But we are looking at ways in Ohio that our before and after school programs can better integrate the components that we know drive successful tutoring programs, that alignment of core instruction to what's happening in tutoring, instructional coherence. And so those are some of the things that we're thinking about, but Ohio has prioritized through our funding mechanisms, those programs happening during the day.
All right, thank you very much. And moving on to the next slide, as you know, effective tutoring requires a lot of communication between classroom teachers and tutors, especially in aligning the scope, sequence, and pacing of the tutoring curriculum with the classroom instruction. And so our goal is to ensure a learning experience that's not only cohesive, but also tailored to each student. So turning to the audience, again, we'd like to hear from everyone in the chat participating in the webinar. Please share your strategies or tools to enhance collaboration between classroom teachers and tutors, or classroom teachers and other educators working in an intervention role. Share your thoughts in the chat. And this time, we'd like to start with Angeline. So Angeline, what are your thoughts on fostering effective collaboration between classroom teachers and tutors? Are there any particular tools or strategies that you found success with?
Yeah. So if you think about the classroom in the video and the teacher saying that she meets with the tutors weekly to discuss student progress, one of the things that we find works really well is when tutors and teachers are connected around what is being taught and needs to be taught at that grade level, especially if tutors are coming from outside of the district and not regular employees of the district that would already have access to the current curriculum. Denver Public Schools has a big push around making sure that all kids have access to grade level texts and tasks every day. And so tutors, it's very important that they also understand that the quality of materials being used with our students is extremely important in aligning with our mission and vision for our students in Denver Public Schools. So there is time set aside for tutors and teachers to check in weekly. There is regular, I hate to call them data dumps, but basically data dumps where, you know, we tutors say, this is what we worked on this week. This is what we're seeing. This is the progress that's being made. Students are also being surveyed and their feedback is coming to the district as well as their teacher, as well as their tutor. And so making sure that everyone is aligned on what the expectations are, what the curriculum is, what the grade level standards are, because not all people that tutor or teach take the time to look at the standards that students are expected to be able to, you know, achieve, is extremely important that when you're working with tutors and tutoring programs, that you are upfront about the expectations, that you are clear on what the curriculum and the standards are, and that students are being exposed to those standards with or without scaffolding, they still need to be exposed to those standards, because when it's time for them to be assessed with their peers, they need to it not be a like shock to them that this is what the expectation is. So in order for students to be able to meet expectations, they have to be exposed to those things. And so it's really important that teachers and tutors are on the same page around what those expectations are and what those scaffolds look like and how long those scaffolds stay when those scaffolds are removed, so that students are prepared for, you know, grade level texts and tasks. So it is extremely important that you're talking about what is happening in tutoring on a regular basis, and that there is open conversation between tutors and teachers, as well as district staff. Everyone needs to be involved and know what's happening with students and where shifts need to happen, because there have been times where we've had to make shifts. We've had to make shifts with the tutor because of personality conflicts, or we've had to make shifts with the curriculum because students aren't quite ready for that yet. And tutoring is the great time for them to fill in those gaps. So it's just really important that there's constant communication on a weekly basis around what's happening with students and tutoring, and that we're not waiting till the end of the month or the end of the semester to then look at the data and say, oh, this is what happened with students, when it's too late for us to make those shifts that may be necessary for kids to really get something out of tutoring.
Well, thank you very much.
That was long-winded. Sorry.
Thank you, Angeline. That was wonderful. Moving on to Susanna, can you recommend any specific tools or strategies to facilitate this development of a strong collaborative relationship between teachers and tutors?
Yeah, so for tutoring to be effective, the tutors really need to understand students and their needs. That's kind of the heart of tutoring, the personalization along multiple dimensions, social, emotional, as well as academic. And collaboration between the classroom teacher and the tutor allows for the tutor to better understand not only the academic needs of students, but can also help shine a light on students' social, emotional needs, and even just interests. We've seen a variety of approaches to communication between tutors and teachers, including really everything from periodic check-ins or weekly check-ins to tutors leaving notes in folders for teachers and teachers leaving notes in folders for students. So less direct interaction and more this kind of written communication. We've seen programs where a tutor mentor actually, so not the tutor themselves, but the tutor mentor interacts with school leadership, so not the teachers themselves, but that the information gets collected kind of at that higher level, and they get this information with little direct interaction with teachers in places where teachers aren't really able to give that additional time that they need for tutoring. That's not at all as good as what Angeline was talking about, where they have these kind of weekly communication, but at least there is some kind of communication going on so that there is really that check-in about each student and this ability to adjust things that aren't going on. The one that works best is really the one that both the teachers and the tutors can use consistently, because it is this kind of consistent information that you want to get. Not all programs, again, are able to set up regular times for the tutor and teacher to interact. And in these cases, in addition to those kinds of notes, access to students' academic progress and goals through either school administered assessments or the tutoring program's assessments, those will be needed in order to ensure that the tutoring session really meets those students' needs. So sometimes the tutoring program has to do their own assessments. In terms of kind of aligning tutoring materials, that's really important. But what's really most important is that the materials are high quality and that they're aligned to the relevant standards. So first, high quality and relevant standards. The best case scenario is that the school is using high quality instructional materials and that the tutor can use and build off of those so that there's really great cohesion between classroom and tutoring curriculum. But again, I would really keep in mind the quality is so important and really, I think, probably more important than doing exactly what's going on in the classroom, as long as it aligns to the standards.
Thank you very much, Susanna. And now, Sarah, what insights can you share about enhancing the partnership between classroom teachers and tutors?
Yeah, from the state level, you know, much of this work is happening in our districts and schools. I think the things that we tend to recommend as our districts and schools are launching tutoring programs is that proactive planning piece, setting progress monitoring strategies up in advance, identifying the feedback loop, ensuring that there are structures in place for tutors to communicate with classroom teachers. The instructional coherence piece is, I think, one of the most important pieces. Again, high quality instructional materials aligned to grade level standards. But we need to ensure that there are opportunities for tutors and educators to connect, because if we're using different language, that can be confusing to students, right? If we're saying addition or plus, that can be confusing to students when they are learning and applying math practices. So I think, you know, that that feedback loop and that understanding of explicit instruction is critical. And the planning and processes that are set in place at the start are what will ensure that those communications and those conversations are happening consistently and are aligned to what's happening in the classroom and tutoring experience.
All right. And thank you very much, Sarah. So moving on to the next slide, we're going to have a poll here for you, but we're moving into the MTSS or multi-tiered system of support part of our webinar. And this framework is sort of like a roadmap for supporting students academically and behaviorally. And as you all know, it has three tiers, and tier one offers universal supports for all students. And like we've heard mentioned, several times already, it focuses on high quality instruction. And tier two provides targeted supports such as small group interventions or high impact tutoring for students who need extra help. And then tier three delivers intensive personalized support for students with significant needs. So really high impact tutoring enhances tiers one, two, and three, and it ensures that we're focused, that we provide focused assistance for students who need additional support to exceed. So there's an audience poll up on the screen. Which MTSS tier do you find most challenging to support in your school system? And I'm seeing about 67, 68% of the people in the audience are saying tier three is the most challenging to support. So thank you for that. All right. So moving on to the next slide here. So we want to turn to our panelists. And Sarah, this time we'd like to start with you. How do you think that schools can successfully integrate tutoring within each MTSS tier to cater to the specific learning needs of students?
Yeah, again, I from my perspective, I think where tutoring really needs to support MTSS is really in the instructional coherence piece. I do think Susanna and Angelina are probably much more qualified to speak to the MTSS and high impact tutoring alignment piece. But from our perspective, we need to make sure that what's happening in tier two and tier three is really what's going to support tier one in from a viewpoint of instructional coherence. I think I'll pause there and actually let Susanna and or ask Susanna and Angela to speak to their experiences, because they're actually on the ground supporting that work directly.
So Angela, we'll turn to you next and then to Susanna.
Yeah, so I would agree with the audience in that tier three is probably the most difficult. Partly because when you, by the time a student gets to tier three interventions, you've pretty much established that there's some things going on there that may or may not, tutoring may or may not help. It depends on what is happening with that individual student that's keeping them from having access to the curriculum or academics. So, tier one, tier two, are typically easier fixes to just bring in tutoring and have students get that individualized help to get them to that next step. By the time you reach tier three, there are a lot of things that contribute to that. And what we found is tutoring, high impact tutoring hasn't worked as well for our students that have IEPs as it does for other students. And part of that is because tutors aren't trained to help students that have significant special needs and academics. And so there really needs to be a person that is highly qualified to work with students that are in tier three and beyond. Whereas tiers one and two are a little bit easier to lean in and help students to reach academic goals and success. The other thing is in tiers one and tier two, students can frequently cross back across those lines, if that makes sense. Like, depending on the standard or what it is that they're learning, they may need extra support in one standard and not in another. Whereas by the time you get to tier three or to the need for special education services, there is something there. There's a barrier there that's more than just, oh, I don't understand this standard. And so it really needs to be a more specialized support than just, say, 30 minutes of tutoring 4 days a week, because that's not going to work if there isn't some other thing that's addressing the need for that student. So I do think that, not to say that tutoring doesn't work for students with significant support needs, but there has to be a specialized tutor to do that, that understands what those needs are and knows how to work. Let's say a child has dyslexia. You're not going to be able to just stick anyone in there to support that child through 30 minutes of tutoring a day. There's going to have to be some specialized support there. And so when it comes to MTSS, I would say it's a lot easier to use high impact tutoring as a support for tier one and tier two students. And if you're going to use it in tier three, there has to be a specialized tutor for that purpose.
All right. Thank you, Angeline. And turning to you now, Susanna.
Thanks. So I really agree with a lot of what Sarah and Angeline were saying on this. Tailored instruction is kind of the heart of high impact tutoring. So I'd like to kind of step back and think about what high impact tutoring is. And I really think that it's intensive and it's personalized instruction. And it's relationship based. So you've got kind of a lot of time, you have a strong relationship that is motivating and engaging, and you have this kind of targeted instruction on a student's need. So if we think about it as those kinds of three things, we've seen high impact tutoring used well at all three tiers of MTSS. Because the content of the tutoring is driven by the student's academic needs and designed to meet that student's kind of individual needs. Of course, as you move through the tiers, you need different things. And for example, you might be able to do tier one, and we've seen really great kind of push in tier one high impact tutoring, where it's in one that I'm thinking of is in kindergarten, first and second grade, and there is a tutor in the classroom who just works a little bit with each student, and it is really part of what goes on in the school day. Then you go to tier two, and these tend to be what we're talking about, 45 minutes, three or four times a week, something like that for students. And you might have a tutor who really doesn't have very much experience tutoring at all, but because they have really good coaching and they have really good instructional materials and they've got the data on the students and they're able to create these relationships with students, they can do a really good job, even though they're not a master teacher. But when you get into tier three, I think that's just right. There's still a lot of benefit to keeping in mind that students are motivated by consistent people and close relationships, and that it's really helpful to have aligned curriculum. I think one of the reasons, there was a recent study in Tennessee that showed that in places that used high impact tutoring in tier three, they were able to get really good results. And they attributed it to the fact that their high impact tutoring had aligned curriculum. So what we were talking about before, it was really aligned to what was going on in the rest of the school and in the program and the students' classrooms. And that alignment wasn't there in a lot of the work that was going on in tier three. And so I think if you think of high impact tutoring as happening a lot with a consistent tutor who knows the student and uses really good materials, I think that it's helpful at each tier. It's just what you're doing at each tier may be a little bit different. And so we have really seen it a lot used in all three places.
I also think that it's important who is doing the tutoring at each tier.
Definitely. Yeah. So once you get to tier three, there are even rules about that you have to follow. So it's, but there, I still think that high impact tutoring can be more effective, not what every district is doing or every school is doing, but there are tier three programs that aren't as effective as they could be because they aren't developing those strong relationships. They aren't using high quality materials, those kinds of things. And keeping the benefits of high impact tutoring in mind in those situations is really useful as well.
All right. Thank you very much. So getting funding in place is really important for rolling out tutoring programs. And it's really all about knowing where to look and securing, getting the right support to identify different funding streams that are available for tutoring in your school or district. So at Cignition, our program is a differentiation tool that supplements classroom instruction and helps students in need of support in math and English language arts. And so this makes us a really great fit for tapping into ESSER, Title I, Title II, Title III funds, IDEA funds, and even other local, state, and federal grants. So, for example, high impact tutoring can be a targeted intervention service for qualifying Title I students. It can be an individualized support tool for special education or English learners, or it can be used by your entire school community to help meet targets set by ESSA for your school. So, since you're over this policy at the state for Ohio, Sarah, I wanted to turn to you first and ask, how can schools and districts best align these funding sources with their educational goals for the most effective resources?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that is so timely as ESSER funds, particularly ESSER and ARP funds, are winding down. We had an unprecedented investment in education for the last 2 to 3 years, and we will have essentially an unprecedented cut as these funds that schools have gotten very accustomed to having available to support students are starting to go away. And what that's going to take is really some hard work on behalf of our districts and schools to dig into how they're currently spending their federal funds and title funds and setting clear priorities for what's ahead. I think, our Title I, Title II, Title III, IV IDEA funds have largely been in place and those uses have been set in stone for many, many years historically within districts and schools. So there's going to be a lot of fact finding, a lot of hard work that needs to happen at the local level to set priorities for interventions, supports, tutoring as we move things forward to identify which programs are most effective and where they're seeing the most gains and benefits for their students. It's not going to be easy work ahead, but it's necessary work to select those strategies that are best accelerating learning for students at the local level. I think, we do have a light on late liquidation with ESSER funds. And so putting contracts in place, working with tutoring providers like Cignition as you move forward, those are great use of funds to be able to continue contracts within the federal guidelines for late liquidation. But I think the majority of the work, late liquidation will only get you so far, is really going to have to be an exploration of how federal funds and state funds are being spent at the local level and prioritizing those programs that are most effective for students.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. And Susanna, we'd like to hear from your perspective as well.
Oh, thanks, Toni. As you mentioned, there are a number of funding sources available to support tutoring, such as federal title funds and IDEA, AmeriCorps, partnering with universities to use work-study funds, and a whole lot of other funds available as well. We actually, for a little promotion, we have more information on these resources in a funding brief that's available on our website, and I'll try to get that in the chat. But just for some examples, Title I can be used to support economically disadvantaged students. Title III can be used for tutoring for English language learners. IDEA, as we've been talking about, can be used to provide tutoring for students with learning differences. Outside of the federal funds, tutors can be funded through the AmeriCorps program. And a lot of tutoring programs use AmeriCorps members, and that can reduce the cost quite a bit. And similarly, universities have a lot of work study funds that can be used for tutors. And again, in partnering with universities, you can make use of those funds. We know that districts will have to make hard decisions as ESSER funds sunset. And I think what Sarah said is really important. With a strong body of evidence behind impact tutoring, it's really important to take a look now at what you're working on that's working well, and make sure that you keep the ones that work. And our guess is that will be some of these tutoring programs, because just historically, they've proven to be some of the most effective programs out there.
Thank you, Susanna. Angeline, let's dive into your thoughts on this topic.
We know that there are other sources of funds outside of ESSER, which is Clifting, and districts across the country have been thinking about what their priorities are and how they're going to shift spending to do things that work, as my colleagues have already stated here. One of the things that we do in Denver Public Schools is outcomes-based contracting, which helps us to manage the limited funds that we have and get what we're paying for and not just spend money on services that aren't really impacting kids. So in that way, we're able to save funds when we don't get what we're paying for, and then reuse those funds to help students in the coming years. The other thing is, okay, I don't know about you all, but these AirPods don't stay in my ears well, so they keep falling out. I apologize. The other thing is, with the title funds, it does limit the students that can have access to tutoring when using them, because it will narrow down who can have those services. But even in using those title dollars, we can still have outcomes contracts with vendors to make sure that we're spending that money wisely and that we're getting what we pay for. Additionally, I would say that partnering with universities, to Susanna's point, is extremely important, because those are, especially if you're working with education programs, those are people that are going to go into classrooms and work with students in the future anyway. And the more access they have to working with students at that level is only going to benefit them in their teaching careers and benefit students that need that individual support right now. And those programs are typically free in Denver. We always have teacher programs that are reaching out, trying to get their candidates in front of students and have access to students in buildings and schools. And so that is a great way of continuing to provide tutoring supports for students without it having a astronomical cost to districts. And again, I would say really, really lean into agreements and contracts that spell out very clearly what your expectations are for services that you're getting, and only paying for what you're actually getting.
All right. Thank you very much, Angeline. So we have a poll for you here on this slide, and we'd like to know which funding sources you are exploring for your tutoring programs. We have federal, state, or local grants, or others. And we're seeing the majority is state and local. And then we see some grants in there, and then just a few for federal and other. All right. Thank you. All right. So thank you to our wonderful panelists for their valuable insights. And now we want to open the floor for questions from our participants, and we've received a few of them so far. So I'd like to address a couple of the questions. One was, would you say that your program Cignition is a better fit for Title I, Title III, or Title IV funding? And I'll go ahead and take this one. I'd say it really depends on who you want, which students or who you want to have use the tutoring program. So for example, if you wanted to use our programming for your English learners, the natural best fit would be Title III. And if you were focusing on your students with low socioeconomic standing and wanted to close the gap for English language arts or math with that population, then it would probably be Title I. And then Title IV would work if you were looking to create a more well-rounded educational community for your school. And I'll go ahead and ask if Sarah, Suzanne, or Angela, if you have anything to add to that. Okay. We also have another question here. What type of training and support do tutors typically receive to ensure they're prepared to deliver personalized and high impact tutoring? And I can speak for Cignition. I could say that we prepare our tutors well for their tutoring. That's really important to us because their readiness means that students excel. So here's what we do at Cignition. It starts with a really deep dive into the teaching essentials. And we also cover everything from using our platform to positive behavioral supports. And we want to make sure that the tutors have all the tools that we need. They also get a quick student mastery training or assessment training piece where they learn to assess student progress effectively using our rubric system. And then our tutors who teach kindergarten through third grade English language arts get a science of reading in-depth training on that. And that helps them with the latest in teaching early literacy. And then for our tutors who are tutoring English learners, we've got targeted training that focuses on sheltered instruction. And then for tutors focusing on students with special needs and also those working with younger learners, we offer training on special strategies that really make a difference. So basically, our training gives our tutors everything they really need to make a difference in their tutoring sessions. Do you have anything to add, any of our panelists?
I'll add to that. I will say that we have worked with multiple tutoring partners to include Cignition, and they are not all equal. It's really important when you're choosing a tutoring partner that you ask that question specifically. How are you training and preparing your tutors to be effective with students? And in Denver specifically, we have a consent decree that requires that any type of academic supports we provide has to be, there has to be translation provided in the student's home language. And not all tutoring programs are prepared to do that. And so because of the legalities of it, that's a really important question that we ask all tutors up front. Like, can you meet this consent decree expectations? Are you able to train or provide tutors that can do this work? It's really, really, really important that you are very clear when choosing tutoring partners, how they're training people, where they're getting their pool of candidates from. What is the consistency with which tutors show up? Like, there's so many things that you need to know about a partner when choosing them. Cignition has been a great partner for Denver Public Schools and make changes on the fly if necessary. We know that they're sending us quality people, but not all programs are created equal. And not to continue to harp on the outcomes-based contract, but that also is a part of the contracting process. Like, how are you doing this? Say up front what you're going to do, what our expectations can be of you, and so we can hold each other accountable. And I would also say lastly that when choosing tutoring partners, sometimes you can find quality tutors in your own district. And then it is up to the district to train them to meet the needs of the district. Currently, we have a tutoring program where we're using our paraprofessionals as tutors and providing them with coaching and training to be used as instructional leads in classrooms. And so there are lots of ways to get quality tutors. You just have to know exactly what it is you want and need, and then go out and look for that.
Just to add one more thing, I know we're a minute over, but the upfront tutoring and who the tutors are is really, really important coming in. The other thing that is important is kind of continuous monitoring, providing guidance when tutors struggle. I think that it's important for the programs that you work with, and even if you run your program internally, because many districts run their own program and don't contract out. In either way, you know, sometimes the matching doesn't work. Sometimes tutors have things going on in their life. It's really important to have that kind of continuous coaching as part of the model.
All right. Thank you very much. And we've just gone over a minute or so. We'll stay on if you have any other questions. And if you're interested in learning more about Cignition, please participate in our quick poll on this slide to let us know what you find most helpful. And if you have any questions or want to connect with us, get started right away. We have a QR code on the next slide, which you can pick up later. Or you can head on over to cignition.com/get-started and just give us a few details about yourself and we'll reach out to you soon. All right. So as we wrap up today's discussion, I'd like to extend my thanks to all of our panelists for their contributions. And if you have any further questions or want to connect, please don't hesitate to reach out. We have our contact information is on the last slide in the presentation. We're all here to support and engage with you. And thank you all for joining. We look forward to staying in touch and continuing the conversation. And have a wonderful day.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.